What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of This Is Hot Boga, brought to you by ASAT Camo. Our host, Joe, has been working with ASAT, and I have been using their pattern for a long time and absolutely love it. Nothing else on the market like them. Really stands out. Check them out, ASATCamo.com. Next up, Black Eagle Arrows. We hooked up with them into our journey into the traditional archery hunting world. It's been a great journey so far, and they've really been hooking it up with us. So check them out. They're awesome arrows. BlackEagles.com. Next up, Styrka Optics. Awesome optics company. Love their gear. We were able to interview Brad, the sales manager over there, and just had an awesome time. So we'll probably have him back on here in a little bit. We post about him all the time with our Styrka Strong and Styrka Saturday. So check them out on our Instagram page and also on their website, StyrkaStrong.com. Next up, Seek Outside. Seek Outside has some of the best tents, stoves, camping gear you could ever ask for. Super lightweight, super durable. We look forward to using them on our next coming hunting trips out west. Getting it done. SeekOutside.com. Our next sponsor is Stokerized Stabilizers. 100% American-made, so you know it's built well and strong and tough. We've been working with Stokerized for a while and can't say enough about their quality as well. They also get our groupings really tight, which we like. StokerEyes.com. Next up, New Breed Archery. Seriously, some of the best bows in the industry. We can't say enough about the RK1s that we just got. They're also doing direct sales to customers, so go ahead and customize the bow however you want. Talk to Kyle, he'll hook it up for y'all. Check him out. And finally, our final sponsor of the day is Northern Broadheads. All the way down from Australia, they've got some awesome products, well built. Again, we don't deal with anything less. Check them out, northernbroadheads.com.
Little Ricky Bobby, I like it though.
I had one late. I went through a couple of just dead red lights, and then one was like a four-way stop, so I went in the shoulder around everybody, and I just cut in front.
That's
and
fine.
A lady just held on her horn. But it was worth it, because that was only 20 minutes late.
Yeah, like, did you tell her this for a podcast? It's okay.
I got Matt on the line.
Yeah, he's waiting.
This is important.
Let's get moving.
What are you going to, you have a minivan. Like, where are you going? That's real important.
Come at me.
Dude, we got to go talk hunting, lady. Yeah. Get off the horn.
I know. I got big plans. I'm drinking some mead with the boys.
Oh,
have we covered this yet in the podcast that Jared brought a little mead with him today? And so we're drinking that sweet honey nectar.
See, this is exactly why I somewhat regret not driving up there, but at the same time, man, 131 would have been backed up all the way to Kalamazoo.
Oh,
it's terrible.
That was my problem.
Usually have a different plethora of booze each episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good. It gets everyone loosened up.
It's a podcast lubricant.
Mm-hmm. It is. That it is.
And that's not the first time I'll say lubricant on this podcast series either. So, well, cool. Where are we at?
Matt and I were just talking to a little Marine Corps, just reliving the glory day, so to speak.
Yep.
We just got into...
you asked me after college how I started my company.
Yes, that's where we left off.
So I was a senior in college at Western Michigan. It was 2012, and I was going to go into either PA or med school or something in medicine after that, you know, go get my master's and my doctorate, and I got accepted to a badass sports medicine program, and dude, I was locked in. Like, I was just going to keep on going and bust it all out. I worked at an emergency room, and dude, life was great. And then all of a sudden I get a call from one of my buddies. He goes, "Hey man, I know you miss working with a rifle." And I was like, "Well, hell yes, I do."
Yeah.
And he was like, "Do you want to get into contracting?" And I was like, "Tell me more." And basically he was like, "Dude, they're going to pay you so much money and you're going to sit on a rooftop and protect the embassy." And I was like, "Done deal." So
you did it? You took it?
That's all it took. Yeah, this company flew me to Washington, D.C. twice, signed the papers, and technically before I even graduated from Western, I took off, and I was working for a private security company doing all the training to get ready to go to Afghanistan, and my teachers were cool as hell. They all knew that I was a little bit different. You know, I had a different background than most people in there, and I just straight up told them, I was like, "Look, I got this awesome job offer. Can we do like some sort of extended learning or something like that?" And so Western was very cool and they worked with me. And so I ended up finishing like my last 10 credits while I was going through the Department of State sniper schools and courses like that. So that was badass. But I ended up going and working in Afghanistan as a designated defensive marksman, which is like the political way of saying sniper.
I guess. Yeah,
nice.
You know, they're not allowed to say, yeah, we got snipers everywhere. So I was a designated defensive marksman on top of the embassy in Afghanistan, right in Kabul. And I did that for like 6-7 months. And it's completely different from the Marine Corps, man. Like, way different. It was just different. We'll just leave it at that. Way different. And at one point, I took off my hat, and it said Made in Pakistan, and I was like, that makes no sense to me. And that's literally how this whole thing started. From one sweaty, dirty-ass hat, I said, well, I'm gonna see if I can start my own stuff, Made in USA. And that was in 2013, the fall of 13. I came home. I hunted and fished all over the country. And January 2nd of 2014, I was like, okay, I'm going to try something. And I literally started drawing logos and getting to work, and boom, it just kept going. And it all started from a hat.
Very cool.
So you saw the hat, and you realized, I'm going to start making things in the United States. What kind of stuff did you start making in the first place?
At first it was like t-shirts, you know, just basic t-shirts. And looking back, I mean, they're just absolutely hideous. And I ran it out of my condo. I rented a one-room bedroom from my friend's condo. And so I had like this little folding table in the very back room. And I'd go to my buddy's print shop, and we'd make 12 shirts, and I'd bring them home and fold them. And I was taking pictures and putting them on Facebook. I was like, dude, blowing up. And I remember it was like January, February, and I had this table full of my section clothing. And the freaking the roof leaked on them. And it dripped a bunch of water on top of the clothes. And then that night, the room froze solid. And I went out there the next morning, and all of my shirts were frozen solid into a block of ice. And I was like, I'm the worst fucking businessman ever.
At least
like,
it gets the wrinkles out, though, right?
Yeah. So that's what I did. I gently threw them into the dryer, and I just put them on a low tumble. And I ended up melting them all, and I resold them. And I was like, man, that's a good save. Mm-hmm. But, like, it was that was the first point where I was like, you know what, why the hell am I even trying to get into this t-shirt business? But it all started with t-shirts and hats, and I started doing gun shows all over the state of Michigan. So there's like, you guys know, there's like big traveling gun show circuits.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yeah, we've got a couple
they
of them.
Hit, like, Grand Rapids, Novi, Birch Run, Cadillac, I mean, all over. So I was doing the whole circuits, and basically I was just shaking hands and kissing babies, man, and stopping people in their tracks and making them listen to the story. And that's the cool thing, is once people actually listen to the story, and they see just how real it is, I mean, they are instantly connected to it. So it's the easiest sell in the world if I can just get anybody's attention for like 1 minute.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And the gun shows is really, really how it took off. And that's how we kind of built a brand in and around Michigan. And from then on, dude, it's just been a grind.
Yeah. And so you're making, what are all the things that you make?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, technically I don't make anything. It's not like I have like a, you know, like, right. A t-shirt making, you know, gin or whatever it's called, you know, working the cotton, but I buy blank clothing.
But you could.
What's that?
But you could be.
Oh, I should be. Exactly. I could, and I should be if I wanted to do this right. I get about 3 shirts a week.
Yeah, that's right.
But, so I buy blank clothing from different stores or different companies all over the country, whether it's East Coast, West Coast, and then they send me their stuff, and then we embroider on it. So we do hats, hoodies, polos, you know, all sorts of t-shirts, you know, Nalgene, anything that's basically badass and is made in USA. I've probably heard of it and looked at it and tried to print on it. Hmm. And that's really how it's just grown, is basically, you know, and that's the thing, is because I only do American made, I'm instantly limited. Like, I'm not afraid to say all the cool stuff is made overseas. Like all that awesome, like Under Armour, you know, North Face, Patagonia, 3/4 zip type stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff's made overseas. So I instantly can't touch it. And everybody wants that performance material, that performance fabric, that wicking stuff. It's like, man, until a company starts making that stuff and they can keep it at a price that's affordable here in the States, I'll never be able to do it. You know, so if you look at my stuff, it's basic. But again, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, Nike or Under Armour. You know, it's a completely different look and a different feel. I just call it like America's blue collar brand is really what it is.
Yeah. So I guess what would be your favorite piece that you have designed so far?
Oh God, that's a tough one. The one that I like, it's called the Section Nation. And because that, so basically the company is called Section 1776.
Mm-hmm.
What we say is if somebody buys something, they instantly become part of this section, this group of people. So everybody wants to be part of something bigger than themselves. I mean, you know, a lot of people are in the military for that reason. And, you know, basically it just, it allows people to become part of something bigger. So they buy something and I shake their hand and I say, welcome to the section. And over the years, it kind of morphed into like, you know, I remember the very first time somebody came up to me like over by Detroit and they saw me wearing my hat and they're like, hey, I'm in the section. And I was like, dude, yes, right on, man. Like, that's cool. Awesome. And it just took off and people started calling it Section Nation. So from coast to coast, if you own a piece of section gear, you're part of this quote unquote Section Nation. And so, you know, the past couple of years when I write an email or I address a big crowd or, you know, I'm doing something, I say Section Nation. And that's basically just addressing everybody. And so probably the best, one of my favorite logos we've ever done is called Section Nation. It's got an S and an N that's kind of woven together. And I say it's woven together like the fabric of our flag is. And underneath it, it says Stand Together because, you know, this time, you know, in our lives and this year, everything is just trying to pull us apart. You know, it's if you don't believe in this, well, you can't possibly believe in this. And then you have to disagree with everybody else on this. And everybody has to take a stand and just, you know, be distant from other people based on how you feel or what you think or don't think. And, man, I just don't remember a time when everybody was looking for a reason to hate somebody.
Right.
You know, so this logo is all about just standing together, like never forgetting what this country is and how we founded this country and how we're all in the same fight. So the Section Nation Stand Together logo is probably my favorite one.
Yeah, okay. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, I mean, talking about standing together, finding common ground, one of our major common grounds here and one of the reasons why we brought you on is that you're a huge bow hunter.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into bow hunting.
Oh, goodness. I've been bow hunting probably, I think I got my first bow when I was like, I mean, I remember back in like Easter, you know, like when I was a little baby boy, my mom and dad used to, well, I mean, the Easter Bunny used to get me like these fiberglass bows that shot like the suction cup darts, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I had one of those.
Yeah, I mean, who didn't? And you get all the fiberglass like stuck in your fingers and your hands, but it was badass. Like, it was awesome. And I remember she trying to like shoot windows and stuff, you know, and sticking to it. My parents getting pissed. And, you know, so I've always loved archery. And so, you know, I went to my first pawn shop and bought my first used bow. I think I was probably like 8 or 9. And I grew up on a dead end dirt road. No neighbors. I mean, hundreds of acres of blueberries, swamps and rivers. And so I used to go out and like stump shoot, man, and just, you know, go out there and shoot at whatever I could. And I shot my first big buck with a bow, I think when I was, I think I just turned 12. I think it was either 12 or 13. I think it was 12. And, real nice 8-point. And from that moment on, I mean, I was absolutely hooked. You know, I've always loved shooting guns, but there's just something so pure and so beautiful about archery. And you know, as you guys can attest, it's a different type of hunt and mindset from a firearm to a bow. And I'm a hunter. You know, I'm in it for the hunt, and that's why I wanted to be a sniper in the Marine Corps. You know, I'm addicted to that hunt. And in order to be a bow hunter, you have to know how to hunt. So, you know, that's really kind of how it all came about.
Yeah. I used to have those Nerf bow guns.
Yeah, the suction cups. Yeah.
The suction cups, but we wouldn't shoot at, you know, little targets. We had cats in our house.
Oh, yeah.
we'd shoot them sons of bitches right off the couch. And then chase them down to make sure they died. But they didn't die.
Like,
if anyone's listening,
Robin
we didn't
the
harm
Prince
anyone.
Of Thieves, like, on repeat.
Yep.
You know, and just anything with a bow, I mean, I was there.
So you get your first buck when you were 12 years old, which is the first year you can legally hunt with a bow in Michigan.
Yes.
It took me till I was 27 to get a real buck. Now, I saw a bunch of little ones, but a respectable
one. You passed them, respectively.
Jared, you were what, 20, 19?
Oh, no.
18. So,
although that was a little different. I got a chance to go down and hunt Illinois.
Right.
On some prime,
some prime
property.
Yeah.
And just drilled a 10-point, 155 inch.
Oh, and that was your introduction to bow hunting?
No. I had been bow hunting
for years.
Yeah, I had been bow hunting for years. This just ignited the forest fire.
Oh, for so. Sure. Yeah. So, for sure. After something like that, dude, you're – well, hey, if it makes you guys feel any better, like Fred Bear. We all know Fred Bear. He's a Michigan
boy.
Yeah,
Uncle Fred.
I mean, yeah, Uncle Fred. He didn't shoot his first whitetail with a deer until he was 33 years old. Or his whitetail with a bow until he was 33 years old. We're talking the founder of modern-day archery. He hunted and hunted. I think he started hunting when he was 27 years old with a bow up in kind of like towards Grayling area. Yep. And he did not connect with one until he was 33 years old.
So we feel pretty good about ourselves.
Yeah, so dude, pat yourself on the back. And you guys meet.
That means Jared's trajectory is now way beyond Fred Bear. This
does that mean I'm destined for greatness?
I hope so.
God, I hope so.
Yeah. So
pretty soon you'll be seeing my name on a bow.
That's right.
the Dinsky.
But you don't have a cool name like Fred Bear. That's like the most.
Oh,
that is a great
man,
name.
You're destined, dude. You're just you're destined. So I read a lot of books. If I do, when I do read, I like to learn stuff. So I'm mostly reading about people I admire. You know, trying to learn stuff about whatever. And man, there are some incredible books by Fred Bear. I just got to finish in his Field Notes.
Yep.
And one of the things I admire about Fred is he tells you every single time that he misses.
Yeah.
You know, he's like sailed one over his back, sailed it low, sailed it high. I mean, he misses more than he connects. And I absolutely love the fact that he has no problem saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you never know, even with those TV shows, you never know if they're shooting at deer and missing them.
Right.
All you see is the kill shot.
Well, it's edited down to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I've tried to make like a few videos in my life, and like looking at mine, oh my God, mine are slop. There's so much editing to make it look semi badass. So right. I don't. Mm-hmm. Who knows what nowadays people are doing?
I just watched your elk hunt video. Oh. It was good. That was a great one. Tree stand elk hunting.
Dude. That came from 4 years of trying different techniques and trying to figure out, you know, because Colorado's got a lot of different terrain. Yeah. And so depending on what area you're hunting, man, I there was a learning curve, dude. I had to learn how to hunt in different situations. And that spot right there is such a honey hole. It forces every animal on one side of the mountain that wants to get on the other lower valley to come right underneath my tree stand.
Yeah, so that makes me have three questions for you. It with this: Tom and I went for the first time elk hunting last year. Didn't see an elk until the last day. Saw a ton of moose. Yeah. So my first question is: what part of the state?
Yeah, so we're in Northwest. So I hunted for a couple of years around Hayden, and then I spent a lot of time up in Steamboat.
Okay.
Area.
Okay. My second and third question is: what unit, and then what cross streets would be nice? You know, so I know where to park and to go sit.
That you're gonna have to bleep out.
Yeah,
we can cut it.
Yeah.
So, dude, I hunted. I hunt all over the place. I mean, I hunted. Oh God, Unit 14, okay. Unit 214, Unit 13. I think I shot my buck in 214.
Muley.
My bull. Okay. 214. Yeah. But so have you guys hunted anywhere around there?
We were like by Fraser, so I think 31. Fraser. I could be wrong. So
I have yet to pop my cherry out west.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can edit some of this out too for the trade secrets.
Luckily, my first deployment to Iraq, my squad leader, one of my best friends in the world. I mean, he lives in Colorado and he's a massive outdoorsman. So my first year out there, he lived in Hayden. I flew out there, stayed in Hayden. And so it was like 14 days of watching how this guy has been hunting his whole life, you know? So that was a massive, massive, leg up on a lot of people is, you know, he showed me the ropes. He even taught me like, you know, how to pack my gear better, you know, cause he's a mountain man. I mean, so I learned a lot from him. So, there's just so many different ways to hunt those things. And on TV, it's like, you know, you watch enough TV or YouTube videos and everybody's like hunting them from the ground and like big aspen groves. And
yeah,
my first 2 years, dude, I didn't even see a damn aspen tree. I felt like I was in just scrub oak, which is an absolute bitch to hunt in.
Oh, it's so thick.
It is. And you can't get in anywhere quiet. You know, I was 15 yards from elk and you couldn't squeeze a needle through there. It's, you know, it's just so thick. So it's difficult to hunt, man. And they're good at what they do. They are very quiet for how big they are. They can move, and their noses are just badass.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. And sorry, back to Marine Corps relations here. You just meet so many different people from so many different walks of life. I mean, there's always a ton of Texans. So you meet a ton of those guys. And I was talking to a guy. His name is Franklin Gonzalez. Short little dude. But I showed him a picture of my buck that I shot. And he goes, oh, that's pretty small. I would have passed him.
He's a Texan.
I go,
are
you
guy.
Freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Dude, Texan whitetails, they got nothing on Michigan.
He goes, come down to my ranch and you can hunt whatever you want.
Why haven't
I said,
you been
how big's
there
your
yet?
Ranch? He goes, it's like 1,200 acres.
Yeah. Said, what? It's a different, man. That's just so different down there. I can't say much because I've never gone and hunted them, but all I know is like when I look at, you show me a buck and I'll tell you it's a Texas buck. They look like,
yeah, they're skinny.
Skinny, wide.
Weak necks, spindly little bastards, and any Southwest Michigan buck will kick its ass.
That's right.
Yes. But, so, I mean, hunting out west, it's a different beast. And, you know, I could have shot smaller bulls, especially my first year. I was in quite a few bulls, but I was within 70 yards of a 300 and, you know, a little over 300 inch bull a couple times. But, dude, I just didn't feel comfortable, you know, slinging one at 70 yards, you know.
And that's a little different than a 20 yard Michigan backyard poke.
Dude, it really is. It really is. Plus, it was an open, I basically stalked across an open field to get within that. And I mean, there was cows all around me, and what a hunt though. What a hunt. But, you know, and I've got video of myself just surrounded by elk, you know, lots of cows, and I've got video of cows barking at me. I don't know if you guys have ever heard a cow.
Yeah. They're about to run away.
I didn't know what the hell that was. And I showed my buddy, he's like, oh yeah, they bark at you. I was like, oh shit. Okay. All right.
The hell, they're dogs out here?
Generally not a great sign.
Just aim high,
no,
play the wind,
take
them down.
Yeah, that means they're on to you. They're on to you.
Yeah, no, we went out for, it's just funny, the learning curve. I mean, hunting tactics, camping out there. So when we went out to a place kind of by Strawberry Lake. And so we hiked in a couple hours, and I took Tom, and I actually brought my dad with and my cousin. And so we're out there, and I got a tent, and I got my 0 degree bag, and we get out there, and it was 40 to 50 degrees. There's a picture of us with like short sleeve shirts on. We had walked out. We felt like we were kings of the mountain. That night it started raining, and then it dropped to zero. I think it was like -2, and it started snowing. It snowed 8 inches.
So, oh my God. Yeah, so everything changes.
Oh, yeah. During the night, Tom had a, he decided he was going to do this. It was a, what is that thing? A hammock sleeping bag tent thing.
Yeah.
And during the night,
the
oh man, it broke. And, in the middle of the night. So he was soaking wet. We were miles away. And so we're trying to cram him into our 2-person tent, which is really like a one and a half person mm-hmm. tent.
Yeah.
And so he got sick. He got hypothermia.
Oh my.
I mean, he was out. The rest, I mean, you're still physically not totally right. So.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn. I mean, and then the rest of the time, you know, you put on miles and miles of walking and walking and looking. And we saw a moose. What's that? Oh, yeah, the picture of us before the storm hit, we're all like, oh, that wasn't that bad, you know.
Yeah, no bags under your eyes. Like, man, we look so fresh. Like, we are going to go kill something. This is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So
surprise.
Then you fast forward 5 days later, Tom is still sick. You know, I have walked, you know, 70 miles. I have seen moose and no elk.
Yeah. It gets so real. Yeah, I mean, every time that Sarah came out there after hunting, I would take off my shirt, you know, and I've been hunting for like 2 weeks, and she would just gasp, and I'd be like, what? She's like, you lose so much weight out here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, honestly, like, I'm living out there off of fucking peanut butter and jelly, Snickers bars,
and
beef jerky, and,
oh yeah,
you know, and just hiking. That was my first year. Dude, I realized, like, the gear that I wear here in Michigan does not work out there.
No.
It just does not work. Like, I was wearing, like, I got this big, like, green hoodie that I wear here.
Right.
Dude, you'll die out there. Like, you'll sweat that thing out, and then it's done. So,
and then you get cold.
It was a big learning curve, and I've got a lot of buddies here in Michigan who, they've gone out there, or they're going out there this fall, and so it's kind of cool that, you know, I can sit down and talk with them over a little quick little whiskey and, you know, be like, hey, this is some stuff I've learned. Let me see your pack. Let me see your gear. Like, you don't need this. You don't need that. Trust me, you don't need this. You're going to want this. But, it's big country out there, man. It's big, and there's so much public land,
right,
that it just gets overwhelming. And like, if you go into a spot and you don't see an elk, instantly you want to switch and go 10 miles away, and
you're right,
you end up chasing your damn tail. And so it's tough to stay focused and, you know, pick out an area that's got the sign that you like and just have faith in it and just hunt it. It's tough.
Oh, it is. And yeah, I mean, it's exactly like you said, you have to commit and have confidence with the choice that you made in the off season.
Yeah.
So Matt, you've done this a few years. What's your most vital piece of gear mountain hunting?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Ooh, that is a good one. Let me think here.
Peanut butter.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, peanut butter and what are those, Uncrustables? Those things are,
ooh,
anything with
talking
calories that tastes good is fucking money out there. Piece of gear.
Don't you dare him say an MRE. We'll hang up the phone.
Oh,
right now.
Dude, I eat those for fun like 3 times
no,
a year.
That would back me up for 3 days straight.
Yeah. That'd
be like a brick
good,
coming out.
I think a good pack is very vital.
What pack are you running?
So I did it a little differently. I have my Eberle stock that I carried out there. I carried it overseas, and it fits me well. It doesn't rub anywhere. It's just big enough to where I can carry all my gear comfortably. But what I learned is that after you put an 800-pound elk on the ground, you need a bigger pack to get that son of a bitch home, like instantly. So, you know, that was a learning curve for me. I shot at the Total Archery Challenge
yep.
this spring, and there was a bunch of guys there, and they were showing me different packs. And
that was up at Boyne Mountain, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep,
okay.
Yep.
Yeah, we missed that.
Oh, it was a great weekend. I suggest any archer, if you can, just go to it. So I think a pack is good, and then I don't go anywhere without I always have a compass and a GPS everywhere I go. I had to use it once. I got lost up on I think it was called Copper Mountain. I have no idea how the hell I did it, but I did get lost. I'm not afraid to say it. And then probably, dude, you got to have maybe boots. Shit, I don't know. You're just logging so many miles. You have to have great boots.
You got to wear them in too ahead of time.
Probably an extra pair of socks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, what I started doing, and I told a couple people about it, what I started, because your first, dude, you get up at like 4, and, you know, you eat, and you get your gear on, and you start hiking. And the first, like, hour and a half is, there's no hunting. It's literally just, you're just hiking. You're hiking, it's in the dark, and you got your headlamp on, and you're sweating your ass off. So I started bringing a completely different change of clothes, and I'll stop way outside of where I'm hunting. Drop everything. I strip down to my boxers. Strip everything down to my boxers. I bring a towel. I bring no scent wash right out there. And I take off all my sweaty ass clothes. I put them inside a big plastic bag, stick that inside of a scent free bag. And then I put on my hunting gear. And then I slow it down. And that's when I start hunting.
Yep.
You know, because your first, it's just a hike. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big learning experience for me too, because I was getting into my hunting spots, sweated through all of my gear.
Oh yeah.
Just sweat through.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then you yep. freeze your balls off. You freeze until
yeah,
the sun
you're sitting
blasts
in my clothes.
You about 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all right.
We've actually done that though.
What?
We'll walk out to our tree stands in our boxers. At least I've
oh,
done
that. Oh, absolutely. My Uncle John taught me that.
And I won't get dressed until I'm actually up in there.
He had those whitey tighties walking in the woods.
That was me. That was me.
My question is, if it's a warm fall day and you're wearing Hunter's Orange boxers, is that enough? Like, can you just wear that?
I think so.
I think the sheen of Jared's chest is going to, you know, alert everybody that is no
I have yet to grow hair on my chest. And I don't want to shave it.
No.
That's for a different day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different conversation.
So, Matt, what's the most overhyped piece of gear, like, that you thought was so important and you got out there and it wasn't important at all?
Oh, gosh. Hang on. I just thought of something else that's extremely important.
What is it?
Right down.
Fucking good blade, man.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Oh, my God, a good blade. Because if you put something down, their capes, they just dull anything you got. And so I just butchered 2 cows last Wednesday, and I used a Havana knife. It's got like those
yep.
replaceable blades. Dude, literally like doing surgery. I mean, the nicest. And I ended up going through 2-3 blades total. One fell off and I lost it. But basically 2 30-cent blades to do two cows.
Yeah.
And I don't know a blade out there that can keep its, you know, its actual edge long enough to do that. So a good knife is very important.
Well, I could see that. Yeah.
Guys, my birthday is coming up. I'm turning 30.
Dude, the Havana,
so
it's like $45, and then you can on Amazon you can order 100 blades for like $32.
Or you can get the section to put their brand on one, maybe.
Hey-o! Gotta make it in USA, Bubba.
That's what I'm talking about. I'll buy one.
Overhyped piece of gear. God, I don't know. I mean, are people bringing like big time electronics up there? Like,
Tom's got his PlayStation in his backpack, so
PlayStation, solar powered. Yeah, I mean, well, that's a must. You know?
Who plays PlayStation? It's an Xbox world.
Oh yeah, it is.
I don't know, man. That's a tough one. I guess I don't know. If I have it, I don't bring it. I don't know.
Well, Jimmy, what would you say is the most overrated?
When I went, the thing that I didn't use the most were bullets. I could have left my I could have left my whole gun behind. I thought that was overhyped. Based on a walking stick would have been fantastic. No, I think the thing that I didn't use any rain gear. It did not rain. I was not wet.
Oh yeah, but dude, the day that does,
you'll be crying.
I had it once where the first morning I had. It was real cold, and I started walking, and my boots got wet, and then they got frozen. So they were just like totally frozen pieces of ice. And so I actually took them off while I was sitting, kind of waiting for the sun to come up, and I put my feet in my backpack. So
dude,
I mean,
miserable.
That was like in the moment, I'm like, maybe that's the best I got. I got frostbite on the tips of all my toes. It was, and I didn't see anything. So again, I think the rifle was the thing I could have left behind.
You brought a rifle. Oh, it's right. You did bring a rifle.
And it was a rifle hunt. It was a.
But Steve met up with you, and he had a pistol?
Yeah, Steve met up with me. He had a pistol. Because we had one. I met up with my cousin Steve, who was in the Marine Corps as well.
Yeah, I was telling Matt. He was in the Scout Sniper Platoon as well.
Yep.
Oh, no shit.
Yep.
Small world.
Yeah, so he came out, and our big thing is I just wanted to find him. So we walked all day, and at night we would drive the roads. Just to see, you know, there's snow on the ground. Did they cross here? Is there anywhere? Because you know, so much space out there. And you know, in retrospect, I think it was we didn't move down in elevation soon enough due to the temperature. But anyway, so he was with me. He had a pistol, and he had it drawn at one point because we came over a little hill. And right on the top was like a little pond, and in the middle of the pond was this moose. And I popped up over the hill, and he was like 20 yards away, big bull moose. And he sees us, and he starts pulling his lips up, ears are back. He starts pissing all over himself and showing me his antlers. I'm like, oh, he takes one step, I'm dropping him. And I kind of wanted him to, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And so he just stood there, and Steve had his handgun out, and it was awesome.
Now, when you say handgun, you're talking a cannon, a hand cannon, or like a little 9mm? Like, what are we talking here?
I'm pretty sure I'd say it was a 9.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
It would take a few shots, but you throw in the rifle.
If it's the same one I shot down at his house, I'm pretty sure it was a 9.
Yeah.
Just enough to piss off Bullwinkle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take a lot of shots to put that bad. But I had my rifle on him too. So, I mean, you got a lot of firepower, but it made you feel good in the moment.
You know, like going out there, you know, I know I'm in bear country. So I got my bow, so I always carried my 40 on my side.
Yep.
And like when I'm hiking in and out, you know, most of the time I got my bow slung on my back and I just kind of walk with my pistol, you know. And I was always so worried about coming around the corner and seeing a black bear. And then you start seeing them and you realize that they are the most skittish, timid animals in the world. Yeah. Like they see you and they are gone. They want nothing to do with a human. And so I started like seeing moose, and I was stalking up on these moose and filming them.
Yeah.
And I'd come back in from the hunt and I show my buddies who live out there, and they're like, yeah, dude, don't do that.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh yeah, those are what's going to kill you. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, yeah. So I, once again, learning curve, don't stalk up on moose because they got a big attitude.
But that's a big Michigan thing, you know. Coming from Michigan, I had the same thing. I'm like, oh, bear is what I got to worry about. But they're like glorified raccoons out there.
That's exactly what they are.
Without a big fluffy tail.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know that next time I hunt out there, I will have my bear tag with me in my pocket from day one because I've seen too many big bears like within 20 yards that I just didn't have a tag for.
Yeah, that's essential. We had one last year, but we never ended up coming up on one, at least during the season. So.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, man, that spot that I found, it took me 4 years to find it. I sat there and I had muley, beautiful black bear, monster bull moose, big bull elk, you name it, dude, everything walking underneath me.
Yeah.
In a tree stand. You were in a tree stand, yeah?
In a tree stand, yeah. Okay. So I initially started hunting it from the ground. I built a ground blind out there. And I had one morning three bears come in, and they were walking around me, and one was chomping his teeth and scratching his back on trees like 20 feet from me. And I was like, yep, no more, no more. So I hiked a climber in there, and that's how I ended up hunting it.
You got like a lone wolf or something?
Yeah, what do I got? A Viper SS, I think.
Sure. Yeah, Jared's I got that one. Those, yeah. The old open shot?
Old school one, yeah. But I don't climb with it. I bring like a ladder stand, like sticks out there too. I just like them because they're comfy, dude. You're in like a recliner.
Yeah, that is a really nice climber.
You know? Stand.
So yeah, if you've got a ground blind built out there and you're hunting out of a tree stand, you must have had at least that herd pattern out just a little bit though. You're not just sticking it up in a tree where you think it's gonna be good, right?
No, dude. I had trail cameras out there for a long time. Yep, I had trail cameras out there, and the way that this mountain range is set up, it funnels everything to within 40 yards of you. So I found a tree downwind of the main game trail. There was a couple that dropped in off of this like little finger, and I found a tree and I was like, holy shit, this is like the tree from God. Like this is the tree right here that I'm going to do it from. And I ended up sitting in that tree for like 7 or 8 days straight, sun up, sun down, before I pulled it off. But I mean, it just... They anything that wanted to cross and get down low in the evening had to come underneath me.
So what do you do if you're sitting up there all day? Do you bring a book? Do you just look around?
Yeah,
what do you do?
Yeah, I bring a book. You know, it's a long sit, but I've always been a very, very patient guy. You know, I can sit there and do nothing, and I am so content. And you know, I always take a little snooze, catnaps on and off. But yeah, I just got books with me and just kind of hang out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some of the hardest part of, you know, at least from the guys that are out west coming east is them having to sit still for a long time. But, you know, us from Michigan and from the east, you know, the other guy that's normal here, Joe, is from Pennsylvania. We're used to sitting hours on end in a tree stand just waiting around being cold.
Yes. Yeah. And that was one of the things that so my buddy that taught me how to hunt 4 years ago. He's a rifle hunter, you know, he'll bow hunt antelope a little bit, you know, but he's a rifle hunter for moose and elk and stuff. And so like when he was taking me hunting, like I was looking at his methods and I was like, man, yeah, like we're within 100 yards of these elk, but man, there's no way that I can shoot them, you know? So I kept having to tell him like, hey man, you know, I think we got to change things up a little bit. You know, it's almost we got to ambush them a little bit more instead of, you know, stalking up over a ridgeline and looking down and seeing elk, you know, 300 to 400 yards away. That does nothing for me.
Right.
You know, so and I honestly think that being a whitetail hunter made me a better bow hunter out there for sure.
Yeah.
You know, especially putting in my time, picking out the right location, because I'm a bow hunter here. Back in the day, I used to pick big open woods where you could see for, you know, 100 plus yards, because when I'm young, even if I saw a deer, it was a success.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I'd come in, I'd go to school the next day and be like, dude, I saw 12 does yesterday. And looking back, those 12 does are like each 150 yards away. You know, so like as you get older, so you really learn to place your tree stands, like ambush points, natural funnels, like reading the terrain, reading sign. And I just took what I learned here and I just put it out there and it paid off. I don't know how many bow hunters go out there and hunt from tree stands, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know much. I don't know that many do, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't either.
And one thing that we found to help us out quite a bit, and we are not sponsored by them by any means, but we've started to use Onyx Maps quite a bit.
Dude, I'm on mine too much.
Yeah, and it just helped out tremendously when we're out there. Even if we're going out to a new spot that we've never been before,
you can
see who's around you, what the elevation's like, you know, because I'm a big topo map studier. I love looking at them, figuring out where those draws,
too,
those saddles, those funnels are going, and just
planning
on this spot.
So that, like, I'd come in from hunting all, like, normally it's like a 14, 15-hour day out in the woods, and I'd come in and eat some food and we'd make tea and literally we'd pull up Google Earth Pro And you can look from satellite imagery, and you can literally see elk trails from Google imagery.
Yeah, that's sweet.
So you can see them. I mean, they're just, you know, creatures of habit. They burn and blow these big ass trails into the ground. You can see them from space, dude. So like I would mark that, and I'd get a coordinate from it, and I'd get out there and I'd shoot a coordinate, and boom, you know, and I'd be out there. And dude, I mean, that's what I did in the military, you know, reading maps, reading everything I got to build a package to go hunt. And, dude, Onyx and Google Gorillas Pro, if people out there are not using them to your advantage, you're missing out.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. So when you prepare for a hunt, is there anything that you do, you know, say you're going to a place you've never been before, you only have, the internet to do your scouting. Is there anything you do, or is that not any situation you've ever even been in?
No, I mean, I naturally pull up and I, you know, right off the bat, you can take a look at overhead imagery. And if you know anything about hunting, you can almost pick out where game is naturally going to be.
Yeah.
You know, so, I got a cousin who lives up in, like Ithaca area.
Yep.
And he's just getting into bow hunting, and so he's got a lot of questions about it. And he, like, he'll send me like overhead maps, and you know, I look at an overhead map, and you know, I'm looking for like any sort of transition areas from like swamps to hardwoods, you know. And I guarantee you, you're gonna find a trail that runs along or just in between them, you know. And
right.
Natural funnels where the terrain just naturally pushes stuff. I mean, animals do not necessarily like to be out in the open. I mean, they just don't like doing it unless it's cover of darkness. Right. So really, you're talking security, food, and sometimes of the year, sex.
And you know, my three favorite things.
Yeah,
and once you figure out where they're moving to get all of those, you can place yourself in a position to possibly get a crack at them with a bow. You know, so I don't like to go into an area and just beat feet around and, you know, blast my scent everywhere and just, you know, blow everything out of the woods. I like to have a strategic entry point. If I can't get in there quietly and without scenting out the whole woods, I just won't even go.
Yeah.
If the wind's not right, or if the terrain doesn't let me get in there quietly, and that's why hunting scrub oak out west is a big,
right.
You know, you look at it over, you look at it on Google Earth Pro, and you're like, oh yeah, this is just a nice grassy knoll. What you don't know is it's actually 15 feet tall of oak brush that you can't even get through.
Yeah,
you
know? And that's... It takes forever to walk through that stuff, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, I about freaked out one day. I literally was, like, caught in it, and I felt like I was just going to die out there. I was like, this is it. Matt's going to die in the woods, and, hey, it was meant to be.
I saw Jared almost die in the woods. It was a pricker bush. We were 150 yards off the trail, and I figured he was going to call it, and he was done at that point.
Just leave me here, guys.
Hey, no amount of prickers will stop me. I'm like a... like a wrecking ball into those things. I'll usually lead the way with a whacking
Send
stick.
Send Jared in. He's going to get full of prickers.
I'll blaze you a trail. Just give me 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yes. But no. So, I mean, it's hunting out west is it's a beautiful thing. And there's nothing like hearing an elk bugle. I mean, there really isn't. It's like hearing a loon up in, you know, on a northern lake up in Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
It's just one of the most beautiful sounds that you'll ever hear in nature.
Well, yeah, James and I have known each other for a long time, and we actually play on the same high school varsity soccer team, and we would have morning practices at, 6 o'clock in the morning? It would be real foggy out, the dew would be on the ground, it would be a beautiful morning, and right next to our practice facility was an elk farm.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And they had a couple bull elk on there, and those suckers would bugle as we're running laps or whatever. Yeah. And James and I would just look at each other and just be like,
I was running around with a Woody the whole time.
Yeah, like, what is that thing? In your little silkies?
put that away. That's not a cross.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just starting to learn about all these elk in Michigan. I mean, about wild elk herd in Michigan and how long it takes to get a draw. And
I've got 2 points, man.
I've got a point.
You do.
Yeah, I've got like 18 years to go, I think, but, you know.
Yes. Seriously, it's new to me. I mean, I knew that there was elk, but man, there's some big bulls that are coming out of here.
Oh yeah, I saw a guy took a video deer hunting, and I don't know even where I saw it, but it's like he's sitting there, and obviously he throws his camera on, and a herd of 20 different elk walk right by, and it's like the most bizarre thing to see in Michigan woods.
And Who was it? So the other night I hung out with Rob O'Neill, the gentleman that shot and killed an asshole known as Osama bin Laden, right?
Yep. Wow.
The Navy SEAL. And so I knew that he was from Montana, and so I was up in Grand Rapids. He was up there doing an event.
Okay.
This is last Friday night, and, you know, most people were going up and, you know, probably talking about, like, military stuff and this and that, and, you know, I was like, this poor guy, that's all that he gets. Anytime he's on TV or everywhere he goes, people are just talking military and, you know, politics, and I was like, man, watch this. I go up there, I shake his hand, I was like, so do you fly fish? And he just looks at me and he's like, yes, I do. And you could tell he was like so refreshed. And we started talking about elk hunting and fly fishing and hunting out west, because he's from Butte, Montana, but he's hunted all over. It sounds like he's hunted all over the place. And it was, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, it connects you, man. I mean, it connects you. And the first thing that he said, he goes, yeah, I do. He goes, it's extremely therapeutic for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, me too, man. Like, it's my medicine.
Yep. And that's kind of what we like to adapt here with our podcast. We like talking with people, you know, about bow hunting. We like to dig into their personal lives a little bit, but it's really about, you know, let's talk a little about hunting, because everyone likes to talk about hunting, or at least the people who we like to have on the show.
Yeah.
Talk about hunting. But I mean, I swear we could sit here and talk all night about hunting.
Oh, dude, and, for sure.
And stories we have. And
yeah, just today I was messing with my trail cam. I'm going out of town all weekend for my bachelor parties, so I was moving some cameras and trying to get stuff ready for that. But one thing I told Rob O'Neill, I was like, dude, I was like, so yeah, Michigan, we got monster whitetail, we've got bear, moose, elk, wolves. And he was like, dude, I heard that. And I was like, man, we got it all. And, like, when you say that to people, a lot of people are blown away that Michigan has all this.
We're wild, man.
We are wild. We are wild. I've bear hunted.
We're the high five state.
Yeah.
In Canada, but I've never bear hunted in Michigan.
I haven't. I've got some. I'm starting to build up some points. I got to figure out a place to go. I got two as well.
Dude, I'm so lazy with my points. I got to get
on. I know. It's a whole thing. At some point, Matt, we should probably get together and do a hunt.
Yep.
Do another podcast around a fire the right way.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe we'll plan like a bear hunt or something coming up here with you. I'll leave that to producer Tom.
I've got very good friends that they own a 500 acre plot just north of the bridge in Ontario, and that's connected to like a 5,000 acre bear camp.
Oh, and ooh.
So Sarah and I, we actually were on the list, and so we get first season next fall.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and they're taking on hunters. If you guys really want to plan something, hey,
we do.
I mean, yeah, and that's the reason I'm marrying Sarah. She loves bow hunting. We shoot in archery leagues all winter long, and she's my partner.
That's not a bad partner to have.
Oh, it's a freaking blast!
I got Jared as my partner. He doesn't put out at all.
I'm really not that good.
I mean, it's so much fun. My brother was my partner the first couple years, and finally I was like, you know what, dude? Like, you suck. Sarah's way better. Let's do this. And that's who we went out and shot the Total Archery Challenge, and it's cool. A lot of my buddies are like, dude, why do you fish and hunt with her? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, the more that we do it, the more I get to do it. You know, it's both of ours. She absolutely loves it. So I get to spend a lot of time out in the woods with her. It's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a great. We'll set something up maybe. But Matt, you know, I appreciate you coming on. I think this is a good time for us to stop here. We've had you for looking at over an hour already.
Jared, really been an hour already?
Yeah.
Oh my
God. Jared, and we're over an hour. You got any concluding thoughts?
I think Matt and I have said our piece together. We've talked.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm sure we'll talk some shit to each other in the future here. So.
yeah, you can plan on it, comms guy.
Yeah, I know. Sure. Hey. Shut up. All right. You know what? That's the only point he can make to me that I can't fire back.
Right. You can call it in, though, can't you?
And trust me, I'm going to wear it out.
I know you are, because everybody does. So bring it on. I'm made of steel.
No, but hey, someone has to take care of the radios while I was out winning the war. Hey,
yeah, so
there it is. That's what I'm saying. Damn it.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on, man. You know, normally I just had people. I've only been on one podcast, and all we talked about was the company. obviously I'm passionate about the company, but man, this is, you know, to my heart and soul, the outdoors and hunting and fishing is, yeah, that's me. I mean, that's what I'm truly passionate about. So thank you guys very much for allowing me to just talking about stuff we love. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, we'll do it again soon. And for everybody listening, this is Hot Boga, and then we're sponsored by ASAT. Thanks.